Hello, this is James Cuxis, reporter with the Marshfield Mariner, and I'm here with Ryan Youngs, Marshfield resident who just completed a pretty impressive feat. Ryan, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what's up, guys? I'm Ryan from Marshfield, and I just set out in March on a journey of the Appalachian Trail. So that journey took me 2,190.6 miles through 14 states. I proceeded to walk through 8 national forests, 2 national parks, 100-mile wilderness section, and I hiked over 100 mountains.
Wow, that is very impressive.
Thank you very much.
What prompted you to do this?
I've always been a hiker. Hiking has always caught my mind, and one day out in the White Mountains, I came across someone who was through hiking the Appalachian Trail, who was hiking the whole thing. So after asking her 100 questions, it was something that was planted in my head, and when I have a challenge in sight, I usually just go for it. I bombarded her with a bunch of questions, and I guess that kind of planted the seed on the trip.
Wow. Yeah. What kind of stuff did she tell you?
She told me she started hiking in Georgia and I was in New Hampshire. So at first I was like, you started in Georgia. Super intrigued. So she was telling me she was living in the woods for 4 months, hiking the trail from start to finish, and all the weather that she went through and the people that she met. And I couldn't get enough answers from her. And I went home and continued to keep looking it up. But I'd say it was about a year before my trip started when I started really planning it and realized it was something that I probably could attain and something I could complete.
So you have this idea in your head, a year before you start doing it. What do you do?
Yeah, so I mean, starting off, let's just say that this is something that about 85% of people who set out to do are going to fail for one reason or another, whether it's financial or typically it's usually a mental shutdown that makes them get off the trail. So to start off, I just started looking up gear that I thought would work for me to get me from Georgia to Maine. And one piece of gear at a time, I would buy it and I would take it out on weekend trips and try it in all different types of weather. So I tried my gear out in freezing temperatures, in the rain, and in tornado force winds to make sure that it was something that could keep me safe while I'm in the woods for, 4 or 5 months. And that was where I started. But really, it was the mental preparation that was hard for me, because I didn't really know what I was preparing for mentally. It was all unknowns, and I knew I was going to be bombarded with a lot of things. So it was a lot of unknown that I was trying to prepare for, which made it kind of stressful.
I can imagine. Wow. Yeah. So how do you try and even prepare for that kind of stuff?
So I would just, a lot of people, when they think of hiking the Appalachian Trail, all they can think about is the beautiful views. But I knew there was going to be plenty of views, but I was trying to prepare for the downs, being wet for days on end and hungry all the time and thirsty and just getting used to living outside and not having a house anymore. So I spent as much time as I could in pretty terrible weather to get used to it and see if it's something that I could even do.
Wow. Yeah. So how often were you, by yourself for days at a time, or were you with people?
So the Appalachian Trail, they would consider a more social trail. So that being said, there is a lot of other people attempting to through hike the trail. Typically, I think this year they said roughly 5,000 people are going to try the trail, which is pretty astounding, but only about 1,000 of those people are going to finish this year. So towards the end of the trail, there was definitely less people, but at the beginning, it was a pretty social experience, which was cool because a lot of us were afraid to be out there. So we were able to kind of link up with friends, which was good. It was comforting to know there was other people out there going through the same thing that I was and trying to make it to the end too. But I mean, usually during the day, I would spend about 10 or 11 hours a day alone with no human contact. And at the night when I would set up camp is when I would see familiar faces typically.
Wow. That's got to take a toll, but that's also, it must be kind of nice too.
It is nice. Yeah, definitely nice.
Were the majority of the other people out there first timers as well? Or were there people who had, experience with the trail?
It was a crazy range. I would say, probably the majority, it was their first long distance hike, but I have met people out there that have hiked, 10 or 20,000 miles of long distance trail in their whole entire life, which is, that's a lot of walking. So it's pretty cool. But I met a lot of people just like me that, were up for the challenge and going out there to give it their best shot. And it was really cool to see the backgrounds of people. I met people who just graduated college, people who just retired, and really everyone in between too.
Wow. So you said you started back in March, then you completed it in July?
Yeah. I started on March 10th. And I finished last Monday, which was July 16th.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, so 129 days from Georgia to Maine.
And that time of year, you must have seen all sorts of different weather.
Yeah, so when I was leaving Marshfield, it was actually when we were getting hit with some pretty bad storms, nor'easters. I mean, it was pretty intense. So that had me a little nervous flying down there, knowing the weather the East Coast was getting hit with. So I started on Springer Mountain, and within 10 minutes, I was getting absolutely poured on, you know, within a mile of my hike. So I was getting soaking wet, and I was definitely thinking, you know, what am I getting myself into?
Yeah, was that discouraging?
It was extremely discouraging. I knew there was going to be a lot of rain on the trail. I was hoping to get my first day in completely dry, but everything was soaked, and everything proceeded to freeze into a solid block of ice that night.
Oh my gosh, what do you do?
I didn't really know what to do because I've never been in a situation like that before. So I just tried to stay in my sleeping bag. I had all of my clothes on, and even with all my clothes on, could barely get any sleep. I mean, I was shivering violently all night, and I didn't know if it was something that was normal or not, but I woke up in the morning, and I kind of had to break all my stuff down, and it was really hard. It was all frozen, and literally every morning would sit there breathing on my shoes for 10 to 20 minutes in order to get my feet back in my shoes, because everything was was rock solid, including my backpack and the straps and pretty much everything I had.
Wow. I want to say it's a trial by fire, but it sounds like a trial by ice.
Yeah, it was a trial by ice at the beginning. I mean, all the water you need to drink is frozen, and yeah, just being cold every day for 24 hours, you know, takes a toll on you.
Wow. So you talk about, you know, having the water there. What are you eating while you're out there?
So what am I eating? I am eating a lot of junk food out there. I was not creative with my meal plan, so I bought what was easy for me. So typically my breakfast would be a Pop-Tart and an iced honey bun, and that was every single morning. And then a couple snacks before then and lunch, so like a Clif Bar or Snicker Bars. I ate well over 100 Snicker Bars on the trail. And then my lunch would make up of a tortilla, pepperoni, and cheese, and I would eat that every day for lunch. And sometimes I would put crushed up Doritos or Pringles or something to make it fancy. And then every night for dinner, I would have I'd have ramen noodles. And I never got sick of ramen noodles, which was pretty crazy because I ate them so much. But yeah, ramen noodles for dinner. And I repeated that same thing every day. And some days it was hard to eat because I'm just getting tired of eating the same stuff.
For sure. Were you carrying all of this with you, or were you stopping and picking up more supplies?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Typically, I would carry about 100 miles worth of food on me at a time. 100 miles would take me about 4.5 days. So I would find a town about 100 miles out, and I would resupply with 4.5 days of food, or what I thought I would need to get to the next town, and that's what I would carry at a time. I learned exactly what I needed to carry, and food is definitely the heaviest part of your pack, so if you can figure out how to minimize the weight of your food, it's definitely feels nice to carry that.
Wow. So yeah, talking about your pack, so you're packing the food, of course, and a couple changes of clothes. Do you have a tent with you? Or?
Yeah, so everything in my pack was pretty minimalist. I only brought what I truly needed, what I thought I needed to survive. So I had the pack, I had a tent, a sleeping bag. As far as clothes, the only clothes I had were the ones that I was wearing and the clothes that I wore when I went to bed. So I would have a clean pair always to go to bed in, or semi-clean. And then, food and a long sleeve and water. And other than that, I wasn't really carrying anything.
Wow.
So my pack with food and water would weigh about 22 pounds, which is fairly light. It's definitely on the light side of things.
Did you have, you know, books or anything for entertainment?
Yeah, I didn't carry the books, but I did audiobooks, so I was able to listen to The Lord of the Rings out there and a couple Stephen King books, and listen to a lot of music because there was definitely times when it got boring out there.
Lord of the Rings, that seems pretty fitting for a long trail.
It was, literally. Yeah, it felt like they were doing the same thing I was doing, a little bit more extreme, though. A little more fighting.
And hopefully the Stephen King ones weren't as realistic to what you were going through.
No, the Stephen King ones were. They were crazy. It was kind of weird listening to them in the woods, but he's from Maine and talks about Maine a lot, so that was kind of what made me want to listen to that.
Excellent. Yeah, so like, what's going through your mind as you spend, you know, the 4 months out there?
It kind of changed as time went on. At the beginning of my hike, it was mostly, what am I doing out here? I really didn't know why. I had doubts, you know, like, why am I doing this? Or what's the purpose of even doing this? But I knew what the purpose was, and it was really just, wow, like, I really enjoy hiking, and this is an extreme challenge. So just having that type of challenge in front of me was super intriguing, and just seeing, like, oh, can I push myself to this limit to be able to complete something that a lot of people cannot do? But yeah, at the beginning, it was just a lot of nerves, you know, uncertainty, not knowing if I could handle the conditions I was put in. But typically, what I thought, it was kind of weird. My brain would just switch to a bunch of different things all day, and I think that was lack of human contact.
Yeah. So yeah, tell me about the human contact you'd find out there. You know, you're sometimes going into towns to pick up supplies, but you also have, you know, the people that are there. What kind of friendship did you make?
So yeah, it's really cool. All that's really cool. The hiking community is super tight knit. I mean, we are just a bunch of people out there. We have a common goal. We're trying to make it to Mount Katahdin in Maine. So our community would kind of come out of the woods and go into these towns, and we would almost kind of like, we'd kind of mingle in with the other real communities, but it was cool. You'd walk into a town and I could instantly pick out who the townspeople were and who the other through hikers were. And that was just a common bond, you know, instantly you'd be friends with those people. But I mean, these towns on the whole trail were so supportive of us. Between people that would pick me up and give me rides to the grocery store, people that let me sleep in their house for multiple days on end and made sure I was showered and had food and did my laundry. And these were just, you know, random acts of kindness all around and I experienced that from Georgia all the way to Maine.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm sure that, you know, they must see a lot of people doing this. And
they do, yeah, for sure.
And it must be kind of great for them to have that as part of the community as well.
Yeah, I think most of the towns enjoyed our company, you know, and they thought it was cool that we were doing that. And they had a lot of fun helping us out in any way they could. Some towns down south weren't as, they didn't really want us there, it seems, but even those towns, there were still a lot of nice people that were trying to help us.
Well, I'm sure they get a lot of the people who are starting, and then, you know, as it thins out.
Yeah, the further north you get, it's more of the real hikers, you know, as a lot of people thought it was something they wanted to do at the beginning and realized shortly into it that maybe it wasn't what they thought it was going to be.
Right. So can you tell me about like kind of the history of the Appalachian Trail and kind of how the, you know, how that came to be a thing that people do?
Yeah, so the history of the Appalachian Trail, it all started with this guy, Benton McKay, back in the early 1920s. And he came up with this idea, or what if I could have a wilderness, you know, spanning from Georgia all the way to Maine? So all of these people in the cities could come in and they could enjoy the wilderness. No matter where you lived on the East Coast, you would have a chunk of this strip of wilderness, you know, kind of somewhat close to you. And at the beginning, the trail was not designed to be hiked from end to end at all. The first guy to do it, actually Earl Schaefer, he did it after World War II and told his family he was going to try to walk from Georgia to Maine. And they asked him why. And he said, you know, I have to go walk the war off. So as he was out there doing it, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy was doing studies saying that it was highly unlikely that a human could walk the entire length of the trail. But little did they know that Earl Schaefer was out there actually completing it. So once Earl completed it, it kind of just became more popular. Other people were obviously trying to see, you know, wow, this is something that we could do too. And over time, it has just grew to be something more and more popular. And now through hiking is a big thing. You know, people are hiking long distance scenic trails from the beginning to the end, and it's people all over the country are doing it. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. So have you always been a hiker?
I started hiking when I was about 15 years old. It started off as a way of exercise. And then I realized how much I truly enjoyed being out in the mountains, and I couldn't get enough of it. You know, I've hiked hundreds of mountains since then, and I'm going to hike hundreds more. But yeah, it just became really addicting. It's like a challenge in front of you, but you're rewarded with solitude and great views and, you know, memories that you definitely couldn't get if you weren't out there.
Yeah, I'd like to hear definitely more about the, you know, the views and, you know, how does the landscape change as you go from south to north?
Yeah, that's the coolest thing about hiking long distance is that you could actually, you know, over time see the scenery change around you, which is something I've never, you know, it never had happened to me before. But down south, it was really, I don't know, it was brown. I guess it was because it was earlier in the season. Nothing was green yet. So I got a lot of good views because of it, because the leaves weren't on the trees. But you have a lot of lower mountains down there and just a lot of rolling fields and, you know, a lot of farms we'd walk through, you know, just 3 or 4 miles of just walking through wet, you know, high grass and stuff like that. But as I came up north, everything started to turn green, and every day I would wake up and there would be more green around me until I was pretty much completely engulfed. They call it the green tunnel, and that's pretty much what it is. It's a tunnel of green most of the time. And then, yeah, the views as I get up north into New Hampshire just became quite incredible. The White Mountains were mind-blowing, spending a lot of my time above treeline and just having 360 views, you know, hundreds of miles in every direction of just nothing but mountains. And, you know, it was really incredible to be able to see all that every day.
Wow, it sounds like that must have been also kind of encouraging as, you know, as you get further along and it's come more challenging because you've been out there for so long to see, you know, the nature around you kind of bloom and become more green. That's got to be encouraging.
Yeah, it seriously does a lot to your mental too. Stuff that I can't even explain is being out there and being a part of nature as it does bloom. It really does a lot for your soul too. I just felt like I was actually a part of nature, and it was a really cool feeling to be so close with it and every day be a part of it, you know, living out there with the animals and, you know, living out there in the rain and everything else and just drinking out of the streams and all that. It was really cool to, you know, I felt like a part of my instinctual, you know, my human needs were definitely being fulfilled out there.
That's awesome. Yeah, what kind of animals did you see out there?
Yeah, so I saw tons of animals out there, but, you know, over 100 deer. I saw 9 black bear out there, a handful of rattlesnakes, bobcats, and, you know, tons of different species of birds. It was incredible. Every day I would wake up and just always be blessed with seeing great animals. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, I woke up in the morning and there was a moose drinking water out in front of my tent.
Wow.
So, I mean, that was something that most people will never experience. My alarm clock for the day was literally the moose drinking water out in front of my tent. So I went outside and was able to watch the moose drink for a while, and I just felt truly lucky to be able to witness things like that.
Was that scary? Or
I don't know if it was because I spent so much time out there, but none of the animal interactions ever scared me. I think it's because I did spend so much time out there, I almost felt like I was one of them, maybe. But, you know, even the bear encounters, as intense as they were, I never truly felt scared. It was definitely intense, you know. We had a couple bad bear encounters. One of them was in Delaware Water Gap, where my buddy Homebound and I were setting up our tent site, and the bear actually came into our tent site and pushed us out of the tent site. So I had backed up in the trail, and one of my best friends out there, Homebound, was trying to protect our gear, and he got bluff charged, which is actually when the bear will take 3 or 4 steps towards you to scare you off. And that was enough to scare us back, and the bear went ahead and took Homebound's food bag with all of his food and his stove in it and ran off down the mountain.
Wow.
So we had to go ahead and share my food until we were able to get to the next town.
Wow.
So even then, though, like, was I scared? Not really. It was intense, and I was kind of angry the bear was going through our stuff, but even, you know, it's just part of being out there.
That's wild. So, yeah, I mean, did you feel... I know you were, you know, connecting with people online, checking in routinely. Did you, you know, feel a connection to home as well as being kind of so separated?
Yeah, I had a pretty tight connection with home, mostly because my mom was my number one supporter and definitely helped me get certain things like new shoes and whatever it was I needed sent to me that I couldn't get on the trail. She was like very good at getting it to me with very short notice, and that was great. So I tried to call my mother once every couple days, which was possible if I wanted to make it happen, but I knew she was happy to hear from me, so I made sure to do that. But yeah, other than that, I usually just would update on, you know, my Instagram and keep all my Marshfield followers in the loop because I had a lot of them. So other than that, I wasn't using my phone too much.
Yeah. This might be a kind of silly question, but yeah. How did you know where you were going?
Okay. That's actually kind of a good question. So I started at the beginning, and the trail is marked with what they call white blazes. It's a 2x6 rectangle that is on the trees. So typically, when you're standing near a white blaze, you should be able to see the next white blaze down the trail. And for about 90% of the trail, they were pretty easy to follow, with an exception for a few places. It was definitely more difficult, but yeah, it was really easy to follow. Like, you do not need a map out there is what I'm, you know, you really don't. A map is definitely obsolete. We have guidebooks that let us know where the towns are and where the water and the shelters and stuff like that are. But as far as a map goes, really none of us carried a map. It was pretty easy to follow the path.
That's pretty good. I mean,
it's really incredible to think about a path running over 2,000 miles that you could just, you know, follow without a map if you don't, you know, if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, I mean, even last week I was doing a hike with Ned Bangs from Marshfield's Recreation Trails Committee on Friday, and we got lost.
I feel like it's almost easier to get lost out here than out there because it being such a famous long distance trail. It's a huge volunteer effort, you know, throughout the whole trail to keep that well marked.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of, do you want to talk about the, you know, the disconnect from home and, you know, being out there in the isolation, what that kind of, you know, felt like?
Yeah, yep, for sure. So at first it was tough because obviously all of us have grew up in a house. You know, we've always had certain things like a shower, a bathroom, and a sink and a fridge, and not having that stuff really took a toll mentally on me. It was hard. You know, that was the first thing I noticed, that, wow, I don't have a lot of things that I took for granted that, you know, that I shouldn't have took for granted, because it's definitely hard to adjust to it. But as you get more used to it, you just feel more relaxed having less possessions. And the more disconnected I got, the more relaxed I felt out there. I just felt like I was actually my own person, and I felt really free. It was a super freeing experience. You know, I couldn't go to a sink to get water. I would have to find a stream, or I couldn't get food for the next 100 miles, so I had to ration food throughout the day. And despite being hungry a lot of times, I was unable to go to a fridge and grab more food. I was had to deal with being hungry. But the disconnect was it was really deep. You know, it was the longer I was out there, the more disconnected I feel. I did not watch any news out there. I didn't know even the most serious news events that were going on. I had no idea about. And I was kind of happy out there that way. It was nice not to know. I didn't know about basketball games or new music or anything or who was winning the NBA playoffs, all that. None of that really mattered to me out there. Just kind of was living in the moment. And it was really great to be able to do that for so long.
I mean, you could have guessed that it was Golden State. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, yeah. I made some guesses. And you did have people that did stay connected. So unfortunately, some people would bring in reality out to the trail sometimes. But typically, most of us didn't really care for that time out there. We were just kind of going with what we felt was important, and that was not the news.
That's awesome. And do you think that's something that, you know, you'll carry with you?
Yeah, a lot of it, it's hard when you're getting back into the real world to not know what's going on. And not saying it's, you know, it's okay to know what's going on, but there's a lot of things out there I feel I don't need to know, and you kind of get bombarded with them anyways while you're out here. Whether you want to or not, you know, TVs are on everywhere you go. So despite not looking for the news, it's definitely found me being out. And even after a week of being out of the woods, I'm starting to get back into that fast-paced lifestyle that I lived before living on the trail.
Right. And do you think you'll try and use some of those, you know, removal skills to, you know, continue on in your life?
Yeah. A lot of things I learned out there, including the deprivation of a lot of the important, you know, things that most people think you need to live, I will be able to definitely take with me for the rest of my life, knowing that I really don't need too much to be happy. And, you know, just kind of follow my passion, and that's what I like to do, and hopefully inspire some other people to do the same thing too.
That's awesome. So, you know, kind of wrap up a little bit, what is your next goal for your hiking career?
Okay, so that's a great question. My next goal is actually this Saturday. This Friday, I am taking a bus from Boston out to Worcester, where I am going to spend a night with a friend who is going to drop me off at the Massachusetts-Vermont border, and I'm going to proceed to hike from Massachusetts to Canada, and I'm going to try to do that in 14 days.
Wow.
So that is 280 miles through the Green Mountains of Vermont, and Vermont was one of my favorite sections of the Appalachian Trail, so I figured, hey, why not go out there and hike another 280 miles? You know, as if going 2,000 wasn't enough.
Got to keep the pace going.
Got to keep it going. I'm in great shape right now, and, you know, it's just the way it worked out. I had a little money left over, so I figured I would go walk a little bit more.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
So one last question.
Yeah.
To kind of wrap it up, you know, totally. Tell me about what it felt like when you finished.
Yeah, that was like tons of different emotions. I don't think I've ever felt that many emotions at once ever. I've been walking towards this sign on top of Mount Katahdin for 129 days, and for a long time I felt that was somewhere that I would never get. Every day I would try my hardest, and I obviously at walking pace, you're not getting there very fast. So once I was climbing Mount Katahdin and could finally see the sign off in the distance, you know, I got pretty weak in the knees. I don't really know what I was thinking. It's like almost like everything went blank, and everything around me was quiet. And just to accomplish a goal that was, you know, such a huge goal for me was incredible. And to be around a bunch of friends doing the same thing, it was really deep. And, you know, at the same time, I think we were all a little sad that it was over. We had an incredible experience out there, a life-changing experience. I made some of the, you know, some of my best friends I met on the trail. They will continue to be lifelong friends. And once you hit that sign, it was over. We were all going back with our families and flying home or wherever we were going. So that was a little tough. But after being home for a while, able to look back at it and appreciate all the memories that I've made out there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Ryan, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Cannot wait to hear about what you do next.
Cool. All definitely. Right. See you guys.